Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, October the 19th. It's been raining again here in North Texas. We've had rain practically all week, and I've been going back in my memory lane here and trying to remember the last time we had rain like this. I don't remember rain like this in October, so at least for me in my memory lane, I don't remember rain like this, but maybe it's happened before and I just have a bad memory. You know, you do lose your memory a little bit when you get older. Well, today we're going to talk about this caravan down in Central America. I have a post about that coming out tomorrow, and my focus is going to be on Mexico. You know, why Mexico is doing what they're doing. We're going to talk a little bit about impeachment. If you listen to the Democrats, you've got Vice President Biden saying, no, let's not touch impeachment. You've got Minority Leader Pelosi saying, no, 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 let's not talk about impeachment. But now you have Representative O'Rourke running for the Senate here in Texas saying, yes, I will impeach President Trump if I get a chance. So it's an interesting contrast there. And obviously, you know, these three people, obviously they're not talking to each other, but there's different strategies underway here. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. Let me begin by just kind of going over briefly as much as I can, because I have limited information on this, as everybody else. This journalist who was killed in Istanbul, I guess he was killed going into a consulate in Istanbul, and it's become quite a controversy, as it should. I mean, you don't kill people like that in a consulate. That's just not something that a civilized country does. And apparently here in the last hour or so, the government of Saudi Arabia has accepted a few things. Number one, they are telling us that he was killed. And they're saying that it happened because of a fight. I guess there was a fight, and because of the fight, he was killed. Again, there's no way to prove that, no way to verify that, but that is what the official statement is saying. And 19 people were arrested because of this. That's as far as I know of the story. I'm sure we're going to learn a lot more over the weekend. What complicates all of this, of course, is the fact that we're talking about Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is a very difficult piece, if you will, in the Middle East puzzle, because not only are they a provider of oil, that's not really as important as people think it is, because we have here in the United States, we're developing tremendous sources of oil, and we're at a point right now where we will be self-sufficient with respect to oil, probably not that far in the future. So I don't think it's because of the oil. I think it's really the issue here is Iran, that Saudi Arabia is proving itself to be a firewall against Iran, and that's of interest to us in the United States, as frankly it should be to anybody in the West, because Iran is not a friend of the West, as we've learned over the years. So it puts President Trump, or frankly any other president, in a very tough situation, because obviously you cannot defend what Saudi Arabia did. But on the other hand, you cannot overthrow their government either, or you don't want to create a situation in Saudi Arabia where they have a revolution and they overthrow the crown, because that'll bring bigger problems, as we've learned in Iran. You know, sometimes the bad devil is better than the new one, and that's we certainly learned that in Iran. So a very difficult situation for President Trump. I think so far he's handling it correctly. He's getting obviously a lot of input from Secretary Pompeo, who is extremely qualified as Secretary of State. So this is a story that will go on considerably this weekend. My guess is that we'll talk a great deal about this story with Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We'll talk a lot about the story on Sunday night when we do the Week in Review program that we've been doing for years. But right now it's just a very complicated situation for President Trump. I just don't know how else to tell you. It's just an extremely complicated situation for President Trump, and hopefully this thing doesn't get out of hand, because the last thing we want is a collapse of the Saudi Arabian government. As deplorable as it may be, as undemocratic and as it is, believe me, this is a lot better than what they have in Iran or what could happen there if they have a rebellion in that country. Well, there's a caravan down in Mexico, or actually not in Mexico yet. They're up to the Mexican border. And it looks like the Mexican government did the right thing here by simply saying, no, we're not going to let you come into the country. Now, I have a post, as I mentioned, coming out Saturday morning, and my post is talking about Mexico. Mexico has always been very, very protective of its territory from Central Americans. They don't have any problem sending Mexicans to the United States or encouraging Mexicans to come to the United States. But it's one thing when it's Central Americans, and they don't really want to do that. And part of the problem is they don't want to be flooded with Central Americans, particularly in the southern part of the country, where that's the poorest part of Mexico and a part of Mexico where they've had social problems before. So I think Mexico is doing the right thing here, and then they're clearly, this is a situation where the interest of Mexico and the interest of the United States are on the same page. Mexico doesn't want to have these floods of people going into their country. We obviously don't want to have all these people showing up on our borders. So it's there's some mutual interest here, and I think so far President Trump seems to be working this out very well with the president of Mexico. You know, it really becomes critical here for Mexico to take control of this situation. They can send a very important signal to Central America that if you want to get to the United States, you're going to have to do it some other way, but you're not going to do it through Mexico. And I think that would be not only a great service to the United States, but a great service to Mexico, and frankly, a great service to Central Americans. I think the people who are encouraging these Central Americans who come to the United States in these caravans, these people are putting a lot of innocent people at risk. They're going to have to walk through a lot of territory to get up here. So there's the possibility of conflicts. There's the possibility of running into different parts of Mexico where it may not be very safe for them. Then there's also the question of the cartels. I think the human smugglers here are the ones who are benefiting from this. Now, nobody else is benefiting from it. The human smugglers are the ones benefiting from it. So I'm happy. I'm happy that Mexico has taken the steps that it has taken. And I think what that means is that we're, at least we're on the same page with Mexico as it comes when it comes to this particular issue. And we should be on the same page. I think when it comes to these issues, it's not in Mexico's interest, believe me, to be flooded by Central Americans, or for that matter, to become a highway to the United States. That is not in Mexico's interest whatsoever. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos Guedes. We'll be right back.
This is Carlos Guedes Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Sisiki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Sisiki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
That's right. And check him out. We have a link to his schedule on the show information right there, right under the show description. Check him out, and you'll learn where he is playing around Dallas. He plays in a lot of different places around Dallas. He's a wonderful man and, of course, a great friend of our show, and we're very happy that we get to play his music on our show. Well, the other big story of the day is all of the talk about impeachment. It's interesting because you've had three different Democrats basically, you know, talk about impeachment in different ways. First of all, you have former Vice President Biden, who basically said, answering a question, he said, no, let's not go there. He got a question about the Democrats wanting to do impeachment, and he said, no, let's not go there. I mean, at some point, if we have to, that's different. But right now, let's not focus on that. And then you have Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, who basically said the same thing. And now her reasoning is a little bit different. She's worried about her candidates. And the fact is that impeachment, or talking about impeachment, is not a winning issue for the Democrats in this election of 2018. I mean, the Democrats in the middle of the country, all these Democrats in competitive districts, none of them are talking about impeachment, because frankly, that's not what people want to hear. They don't want to talk about impeachment. That's not something that is a very serious topic. Obviously, any president could be impeached, of course. And if there's evidence of, that he broke the law, I would be the first one to support impeachment. But that's not the case here. There's no evidence of it other than some Democrats are talking about it. But the gentleman who's running for the U.S. Senate here in Texas, Robert O'Rourke, known as Beto, he said in an answer at CNN that, yes, he would vote for impeachment, that he feels there's enough evidence to indict the president, which is, again, extremely, extremely irresponsible on the part of Robert O'Rourke. There's no evidence right now to impeach the president. There's nothing of the sort. I mean, this is clearly a political statement that Beto O'Rourke is making. The question is, why is he saying this? Why is a guy running for the Senate in Texas who's behind 7, 8, or 9 points, whatever poll you want to look at, why is he saying, yes, let's talk about impeachment? I think the answer is that Beto O'Rourke understands that he's not going to win. He's not going to win in Texas. He knows it. And I think what he's doing is that by talking about impeachment, he's hoping to energize his base. He's hoping to get a turnout on election day, because the reality is that one of the ways you energize a good chunk of the Democrat Party these days is to talk about impeachment. I mean, impeachment has become the one thing that many of these groups agree on and the one thing that gets them excited. So that's why I think Beto O'Rourke is doing it, because he wants to generate excitement and he wants his base to show up on election day. But other than that, I don't see any other reason for saying it. I mean, look, if Beto O'Rourke thought that he really had a chance to win Texas, if he thought he was, let's say, in a dead heat here in Texas, he wouldn't be talking about impeachment 2 weeks before the election. Because if you're in a dead heat with Ted Cruz, you're looking for Republicans. I mean, you're looking for centrists. You're looking up for independents, people who could switch to your message. And impeachment is not a message that frankly appeals to anybody other than the very extreme of the left of the Democrat Party. So that's what this is all about, I think, with Beto. He's just trying to get a turnout. He's trying to get people to show up on election day, and we'll see if it works. We'll see if he can generate a big turnout. Early voting starts next week, so we'll see how those numbers turn out. Well, obviously, there's a lot of talk about 2018 and the consensus, listening to the experts, the consensus is that the Republicans will hold on to the Senate, that the Senate will stay in GOP hands, and that they will increase the number of seats in the Senate anywhere from 3 to 4 to 5. That's kind of the range, 3, 4, or 5. And what we're talking about here, of course, are those 5 red states plus Florida, and holding on to Arizona and to Nevada. That's the idea. That's where the 3 to 5 net comes from. Over at the House, this is where there's a lot of confusion, frankly, because, yes, the general consensus, I think most experts agree that the Democrats will win the House. But if you listen to some of them, what they're saying is not so fast, not so fast. Yes, it looks good for them, but it's not over yet. The game's not over. There's still a few more innings to play, as they say. And many people are beginning to say that whoever wins the House, whoever the majority party is, and I tend to subscribe myself to this theory, what they're saying is whoever the majority party is, very likely going to have a very small majority. It takes 218 to have a majority. And what they're saying is you could have a majority party with maybe 222, 223, 225, which means plus 5, plus 6, which is, technically a majority. But that's not going to make it very easy, especially for the Democrats, to get anything done. Because once the Democrats are the majority party, they're going to have to come together in some kind of a governing plan. And if you know anything about the Democrats, they're deeply divided between the left and the center. And the only thing these people agree on is that they hate Trump. But once they have to get into details, they don't really agree on a lot of things. So we'll see what happens. A couple of weeks to go on this. But right now, it looks interesting in the House, and it looks favorable for the GOP in the Senate. Well, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.